Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Breakdown. We are back after our little break last weekend. It's the summertime. Everybody needs a little bit of time, and we've got a bit of a show for you tonight. A little excited about this one, not going to lie. There's so much to talk about, and there's some really important things that we need to talk about tonight. So we're going to be trying to get through a bunch of topics. We've got a bit of a deeper dive towards the end of the show. We're going to be talking about the Alberta Prosperity Project. God help us all. Maybe literally, maybe figuratively, it's hard to tell with this particular organization. But we're going to get into that towards the end. One of the things that we've learned is that if we start off with the really, really heavy stuff and we just keep rolling with the really, really heavy stuff, then it tends to get a little bit weighty. So we like to start off with a little bit of lighter stuff. So we're going to start with some of the bizarre social media choices that we saw from UCP leadership candidates this week. And there were some weird ones. The one that we've got up on the screen right now is a tweet from Danielle Smith, where she's very clearly doing a dog whistle to truckers. She's got a, for those of you that are listening on the Twitter live spaces, it's a picture of the Danielle Smith trucker tweet. If you're not blocked by her, you can go to her profile and take a look at it. But most of us are blocked now, I think. But it has a tweet where she talks about, "Our truckers are the backbone of our economy. I'm thrilled to have their support and committed to helping their industry improve safety, create shared responsibility, and cut red tape. If you're 10-4 rubber duck," oh, isn't that cute? "For our truckers, get a membership." This was obviously before the UCP membership cutoff, which was Friday at midnight. And then she's got a graphic of her standing at a podium in front of a bunch of truckers. But what's interesting about that graphic is it's covered in a white sheet. Now, we've talked about the fact that Danielle Smith seems to be very comfortable referencing things. One of her biggest campaign slogans has been the whole Alberta First. And in our interview with not Danielle Smith, the not UCP leadership candidate that we did 2 weeks ago, we talked about the fact of that slogan has a bit of a history. And that history's not exactly great. So the slogan comes from, it's derivative of, America First, which was a slogan used by the Ku Klux Klan. So maybe it's not a huge shock that Danielle Smith's podium is covered in a white sheet. Moving on from there, though, Brian Jean had his own little moments going into the ending days of the membership drive for the UCP leadership race. He put out a bunch of tweets, and his big theme seemed to be freedom, and everything was in big blue or white letters, blue background, freedom, freedom, freedom. And then he came out with this little gem, which was quite odd, because he's talking about Fort Mac, and his tweet says, "This has always been an issue in northern Alberta. Workers who fly in and out from other provinces don't pay provincial taxes in Alberta, and they don't help the local economy. We need to take steps to encourage or to discourage Alberta employers from relying on these types of workers." Now, there's a whole lot to unpack in this tweet and this policy proposal that he's put forward. The first thing that we need to talk about is the fact that, first of all, people are flown in because they need those people to do the jobs. Some jobs just require specialized people to do the things. There's a big part of Canada that has to do with mobility rights. And we've seen Mr. Jean with all of his freedom, and we can't restrict freedom in any way. He's gone off quite a bit about the importance of not restricting freedom. But here he is talking about potentially limiting mobility rights. You know, conservatism has a history of small government and free market. And this is not exactly a great way for Brian Jean to say, you know what, we're going to support oil and gas, we're going to support our energy industry, and if you want to come do any business and you need to bring people from out of the province, it's going to cost you more, but please come here and do business. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the principle itself is really quite flawed, because it's very much a double-edged sword. If we go down the road of saying, look, if you live in BC and you come to work in Alberta, we're going to make sure that we collect your provincial tax, or we have some kind of a tax system to make sure that we're getting money from you. But that immediately forces the question, well, what happens if somebody from Alberta goes to BC? Does that now mean that Alberta is going to give up those income tax? Are we now going to create a system where, depending on where you're working and for how long you're working there, maybe it's a day, maybe it's four, doesn't matter. We're going to have this really complex, administrative heavy system to make sure that the province that the work is being done in gets the taxes. It's absolutely ludicrous. And it raises the question, you know, if we're going to go down this road, let's go down this road to the natural conclusion. There's a lot of people who work in Calgary who come in from bedroom communities. There's a lot of people who live in Airdrie who come to Calgary for work. There's a lot of people who live in Strathmore. A lot of people who live in Chestermere. Lots of people live around the city of Calgary. They don't pay Calgary property taxes, but they come to Calgary, they use our roads. So maybe we should be charging them too. Maybe we should be subcharging all of these municipalities. It's ridiculous. And it's particularly ridiculous because when Brian Jean was working in Ottawa as an MP, he didn't pay income taxes to Ontario. He paid them in Alberta. So it's an incredibly ridiculous, dog-whistly kind of thing to throw out to the ether. And again, it's continuing on this theme of misinformation, misrepresenting the complexity of issues, trying to get people angry. But there's probably no better example than the announcement that we saw from Rebecca Schultz. She got herself a campaign co-chair. That campaign co-chair is Stephanie Cusey. And the way that she announced this was with a video that went up on social media, went up on her Twitter, went up on all of her social media platforms. And we're going to play a little bit of it for you here because there's a lot to unpack.
We all remember the terror of 4 years with Rachel Notley, our energy sector demolished by her hands, the educational system hijacked with our kids taught to turn against our history and our industry, and government ballooning to record levels, resulting in higher taxes for Albertans. The very possibility of that happening again keeps me awake at night.
But I won't let that happen. I'll continue to support our natural resource sector and give power back to families and be prudent in the funding of our government. And today I'm announcing that Stephanie Cusey will be by my side as co-chair of my campaign alongside Rona Ambrose to help me do it.
Now, like I said, there's a lot to unpack in that very brief little chunk of video. But here's the biggest theme that I want you to kind of think about as we go through. I got half a page of things here that we need to talk about in regards to that video. And the big theme that I want you to think about is there's some really hyperbolic rhetoric going on there. And we're going to unpack some of it in just a sec. There's no way that video wasn't created with Rebecca Schultz's okay and knowledge. And there's a couple of different reasons for that. First of all, she appears in the video. So she's clearly very comfortable with Stephanie Cusey saying the things that she says. And you can even probably take it a step further because that was either not the real Stephanie Cusey, that was just a robot impersonating her, or there was very clearly a script that somebody was struggling with a little bit. So these words were figured out well in advance. This was something that UCP leadership candidate Rebecca Schultz felt comfortable, throwing out into the ether. And let's unpack it a little bit. First of all, terror, really? You know, there's a lot of people who don't like Rachel Notley. There's a lot of people who don't like the NDP. There's a lot of people who have issues with their policies. But when you say the word terror, that sort of conjures to mind, at least for me, the image of somebody kind of hiding under their bed, frozen in fear, unable to move or do anything about the situation. And even if we want to say maybe there was this very small number of Albertans who just stayed under their beds for the entire NDP administration, it's not really the most inspiring look for a member of parliament to say that she felt terror at Rachel Notley and the NDP, and that it keeps her up at night. That's just ridiculous. And if it's true, that's a scary, scary testament for how this member of parliament is handling a little bit of stress. Moving on from there, the energy sector demolished by her hands. Once again, we return to this narrative of the idea that somehow the Premier of Alberta has control and influence over the global economy and global oil and gas prices. We've seen in the last few months just how helpless the province actually is, because even when the UCP rolled out their tax vacation for gas prices, we saw very quickly the oil companies went, well, maybe we're going to see what we can get away with here. And then the UCP said, we're lighting a fire. And then, oh, look, the rebate's back. Everything's happy. So it's very, very clear that at best, premiers have influence, small influence, over what oil and gas companies do inside their borders. But when we're talking about a global energy market, to suggest that Rachel Notley single-handedly, with her own hands, went around to every single, oil pump and said, I'm going to wreck this. I'm going to demolish this. It's hyperbolic. It's ridiculous. The education system was hijacked. Even if you want to go down the road that the NDP made major changes to the curriculum, which they didn't. This has been talked about and disproven seven ways of Sundays so many times that the curriculum was started years before the NDP got in. They picked up the ball and ran with it. But we've spoken to people here on the show that have said that they were part of that process and it was anything but ideological. But here we are going back to that trope of, oh, they hijacked the curriculum. They changed the whole curriculum. Well, first of all, they didn't hijack anything. They were elected. Nobody had anything at gunpoint. There was no violence. They got elected. They continued with the curriculum as it had already been started. That's it. That's the ballgame. But again, we have, again, a conservative UCP leadership candidate throwing this idea out to the ether, even though it's patently false. And turning against our history? If you take a look at what the big things that the UCP campaigned against in 2019, they were talking about the fact that there was too much emphasis on the things that Canada did to First Nations people, and continue to do, by the way. But they did a whole bit about how, you know, we shouldn't have to do these land acknowledgments. It's too much. It's over the top. And they actually stopped doing them, by and large. They certainly removed the requirement for them. But a lot of organizations saw fit to say, you know what, we're going to keep going with them because they are actually important. There's no hijacking of history. There's no revisionist history. There's including parts of Canada's history that maybe people are a little bit uncomfortable with because maybe they present a more accurate, not quite such a rose-colored glasses view of how Canada got to where it is today. And that's actually really, really important because as the saying goes, if we don't learn from our history, we're bound to repeat it. But let's talk specifically about the statement that government ballooned with higher taxes for Albertans. Let's really get into that one because that's an important part of the conversation. Let's take a look at what corporate taxes did. So in July of 2015, sorry, let's go back even farther than that. From 2019 to 2015, the general corporate tax rate in Alberta was 10%. The small business rate was 3%, and there was a 7% small business deduction. In 2015, it did change. The general corporate tax rate went to 12%. The small business rate didn't change. But what did change for small businesses is their small business deduction amount went up to 9%. And in fact, in 2017, the small business tax rate went down. It went down to 2%. And the small business deduction rate went up to 10%. For anybody who's not clear, at the time, a small business was defined as any kind of business that was making $500,000 or less, which is the vast majority of small businesses in Alberta. But that's it. There was a 2% corporate tax rate over the entire tenure of the NDP's administration. But let's keep going. Let's explore this a little bit more. What was personal income tax like? Well, in 2015, before the changes that were made in 2015, all taxable income was flat, taxed at a flat rate of 10%. In 2015, it was changed. The first tier was still 10%. If you made over $125,000, then it was 10.5. If you made over 150, it was 10.75. If you made over $200,000, it was 11%. Now, it did continue to go up over that time period. Eventually, it got to the point where if you made under $126,000, $625, 10% across the board. If you made between that and about $150,000, 12%, from $150,000 to $202,000, 13%. So really, the only areas, the only people that got taxed were people who were making not small amounts of money. And it stayed that way. In fact, the only thing that changed as we went through things were that the amounts went up a little bit. So in 2018, $128,000, $145, anything below that, still the 10%. UCP changed it a little bit for personal taxes. They increased those numbers even more. So now, currently, the Alberta income tax applies at 10% up to $131,000. So the only thing that's changed over the last 5 years, excuse me, almost 10 years, has been a small increase for the richest Albertans. But let's put a little bit more context into this. Let's take a little bit of a better look. What is the average amount of money that people make? Before we get to that, let's take a look at some other things that are making Albertans' lives a little bit more expensive. Let's talk about inflation. So according to the government of Alberta's own data, inflation, the last number they have up for inflation, is currently, inflation is at 8.4%. And for those of you that are following along on the YouTubes, you can see that's the highest that it's been since 2019. So if we want to talk about things that are making life more expensive, it's not income tax, it's certainly inflation. Well, maybe, you know, we should probably apply the same argument to inflation that we apply to oil and gas and the energy market, because it is a global problem. We're seeing inflation go up all the way around the world right now. It's going up in the States, it's going up in Europe. So maybe we should look at some other things. Where are some other things that we might be making Albertans' lives more expensive? Well, if we take a look at insurance prices and we look at what the insurance prices are since 2019 for car insurance, it's gone up roughly at least 20%. And for certain age groups, ages 25 to 44, it's gone up almost 30%. Now, that's not something that the NDP can be blamed for, because they're not in power. So either we have to apply the logic, there are global things that happen, and governments might have a little bit of influence, or we have to say, you know, there's some things that the government actually do, like lift insurance caps, that actually make lives more expensive for Albertans. The language in this video is completely over the top. It's misleading and it's irresponsible. It's clearly scripted and it was clearly signed off on by Schultz. So let's put that into full context here. Schultz created a campaign ad, certainly open to interpretation, at the very least. It's misleading, and at worst, it's irresponsible, irrational, and unhinged. I wonder what Stephanie Cousy would say about irrational and unhinged.
I sit across from Trudeau every day in the House of Commons, and I can tell you, he does not listen to and will not work with those he considers irrational and unhinged. If we are serious about Alberta asserting itself within the Federation, we must have a leader who will be taken seriously.
And at least in the words there, that's something that Stephanie Cousy did get right. Because we do have to have somebody at the helm, ideally, who will be taken seriously. Unfortunately, with this campaign ad, Schultz makes it look pretty clear, as much as Stephanie Cousy gave her the little hand wave, it may very well not be her. Moving on, though. One of the big pieces of news that came out was Doug Schweitzer, MLA for Calgary Elbow, minister of a bunch of things, is stepping down. Not only is he stepping down from being a minister, but he's like straight up leaving the role of MLA. He is out. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people who have argued that Doug Schweitzer has been one of the more rational, responsible ministers and MLAs that's been in government. Now, that's obviously open to some interpretation, but there's a lot of people who feel that way. And a lot of people who know him say that what the UCP has been doing for the last 3 years, that's not really representative of Dougie. And it looks like he's finally had his fill. It also looks like he may well be looking at the current field of UCP's leadership candidates and just going, nope. He has been offered a job. He's taking another job. He's going to be leaving. We don't know when. And this is where things get a little bit interesting, because what's going to happen, nobody really knows. So when Doug steps down, that's going to open up a seat which would maybe have a by-election. And if one of the UCP leadership candidates wins, who doesn't have a seat in the legislature, historically they would run in a by-election so that they can sit in the legislature and lead government while they're doing all of the things. There's some real questions around whether or not Daniel Smith would be able to win in Calgary Elbow. But there's also some real questions as to whether or not there should even be a by-election. And this is where it gets to be really important. This is a perfect working example of the fact that politicians make mistakes. So if you take a look at the Legislative Assembly Act, it says that an election doesn't need to be held in the last 6 months of the legislature's life. Pretty straightforward, right? That same act also says that no assembly shall continue longer than 5 years. Now, that act was created in 2002, and the five-year piece has never been updated. But what has been updated was when Bill 81 came into force and amended the Elections Act, because what Bill 81 did is it said, you know what, we're going to have fixed election dates. Every 4 years, last Monday in May, there's going to be an election no matter what. Which kind of forces the question, which rules are we playing by? Because if we go by the amendments that Bill 81 made, there doesn't need to be a by-election. We're well within the last 6 months of the next full election. But if we go by the definition in the Legislative Assembly Act, then we need to have an election because it's 5 years. It's really important to understand that politicians make mistakes when they're writing legislation. And this is one of the reasons why some of the legislative proposals that have come up in this UCP leadership race are so dangerous. Especially the ones that say openly and candidly that they're just going to subvert the courts. If the court makes a decision, they're just going to ignore it because that's what they want to do. And that's what Danielle Smith's campaign has said. We've got a whole episode coming up on that. I'm going to talk about a little bit more towards the end. Moving on from there. Athabasca University. There's been a little bit of controversy around Athabasca University. So at the beginning of COVID, Athabasca University said that they're going to go to a virtual, near virtual campus. Now, there's some important things to know about Athabasca University to put things in context. First of all, they've always been a long-distance university. When they were first created, they were created to be a distance learning institution. But there's some other things that are really important to know about Athabasca University, and probably the most important, in my opinion, is the fact that it's an open university. Now, what does that mean? It means literally anyone can go there. It means regardless of what your high school education was, regardless of what your academic history is, you can get into the general studies program at Athabasca University. You don't need any pre-qualifications. If you want to take a course there, you can take a course there. There are only a handful of these universities that afford these opportunities to people. It's a really, really important part of post-secondary education. And the distance education piece is really, really important for people who are trying to work two or three jobs to make ends meet, but they do want to advance their education. So to put a university like this in any sort of danger is a really, really bad idea. But for the last little while, that's been exactly what's happening. When Athabasca University announced that they were going to be pursuing a near virtual program, the town of Athabasca, a group of people there, said, oh, you can't do that because we don't have the teachers and the administrative staff. If they're not living in Athabasca, that's going to destroy our town's economy. We should make it so you have to stay. Now, that in and of itself is a fascinating argument, because if your business case for people coming to live in your town is we're going to force you to, maybe that says some things about your town. I don't know. But they put together a group that petitioned the government to say, hey, you got to make them stay. And for quite a while, the Minister of Advanced Education, Demetrius Nicolaides, was saying, yeah, you know what? We're going to do that. We're going to make sure, because these guys do receive some public funding, we're going to make sure that they have to have their staff living in Athabasca. Well, this week, they finally blinked. After months of many, many people saying, this is a terrible, terrible, terrible idea, they finally said, oh, well, okay, maybe just administrative staff, maybe it doesn't have to be everybody, which makes a lot of sense, because we are living in a time where more and more jobs are able to be done virtually. And the more, especially as we're continuing to navigate COVID, and as there are new things rolling up on the horizon, the more that we can have those virtual options for people who want them, for industries that support them, the more it makes sense. The big story this week, though, has to be the essay. Now, this has been a really bizarre and complicated little journey. So we're going to try to do a little bit of a timeline here to make a little bit more sense of it. The Her Vision Inspires Essay Contest was announced in February of 2022. Now, it was done as a sort of a joint effort between the Legislative Assembly Office, which is, you know, Speaker of the House Nathan Cooper's sandbox, and between the Commonwealth Women Parliamentarians, which is a national organization. And the representative for the Commonwealth Women Parliamentarians is Jackie Armstrong Hominick. Apologize if I'm saying that a little bit incorrectly. But it was announced in February 2022. They did a big video saying, hey, we want to hear from you young ladies about some very specific things. They had some very tangible and real goals. From the website that used to exist, they said the panel will review the submissions received, which will be judged on originality, creativity, a demonstrated understanding of what a parliament legislature is and why it is important. And then they said that the prize, they would be awarding first, second, and third place prizes. There's going to be some thrilling gift cards to the legislative gift shop, which is what I'm pretty sure every young woman between 17 and 25 wants. Guys, remember that come Valentine's Day. And then it took a long time, because the submissions closed in March, and then we didn't really hear a whole lot of anything. Well, the results were posted last week. This was after the judging took place. Now, there was some confusion around the judging, but one of the pieces about the judging that was very, very clear was that Jackie Armstrong Hominick was going to be one of the judges for sure. And what it said on the website, that doesn't exist anymore, was that the judging panel would be a panel of female members of the Legislative Assembly. They would choose the three winners. It's winner number three that really causes all of the problems for everyone. So the third place entry was written by someone with the name S. Silver. And it was chosen by the judging panel to be in third place. And it included some extremely racist and misogynistic comments, as well as some shout outs to, and I wish I was making this up, straight up Nazism. After that submission was put up, it was quickly removed after social media basically said, what the holy hell is this? But of course, screen caps readily available, as you can see on your screen. There are a few quotes that I want to take a second to read you, because it is that bad, and we have to be able to talk about these things. While it is sadly popular nowadays to think that the world would be better off without humans, or that Albertan children are unnecessary as we can import foreigners to replace ourselves, this is a sickly mentality that amounts to a drive for cultural suicide. Another segment. Women are not exactly equal to men. The biological reality is also under attack by present-day delusion. To try and promote that women break into careers that men traditionally dominate is not only misguided, but it is harmful. Another section. I believe that the best approach would be to reward families for their reproductive service, both with financial rewards to offset the financial burden they are taking on, and with medals to symbolize this valuable achievement of having 2+ children. The last country to give a medal for having kids to keep the culture going was literally Germany during the Nazi era. Now, obviously, there was a lot of anger and there was a lot of frustration, rightfully so. And there are a lot of people wondering, okay, so we know that Jackie Armstrong Homanek was one of the judges. Who the hell else was on watch when this thing got through? How many other essays were there? Well, we got told on the Tuesday that there were only 2 judges. One of them was Jackie Armstrong Homanek, and the other one was Jackie Lovely. And that was actually confirmed the next day by real reporters, because, again, to be clear, we're not reporters here at The Breakdown. We're not journalists. We don't pretend to be. Okay? But Michelle Bellefontaine did an amazing job of sourcing from every single female UCP MLA. She reached out to every single one and said, were you part of the judging panel? And she reached out to all the NDP MLAs. She reached out to every female female MLA in the legislature. And it eventually got confirmed that there were only 2. It was Jackie Armstrong Homanek and Jackie Lovely. Now, I'm going to go down a bit of a rabbit hole here. I think it's important to note, given what we've seen over the last week in particular, I think it's also in part like, it is new. The amount of abuse and violence and threats that we are seeing directed towards female journalists is totally unacceptable. It was a female journalist that figured this out and that confirmed all of this. We get our little tips now and then, but we're not journalists. We don't do the legwork of journalists. A female journalist did. She broke this story. She figured it all out. And yet, we are seeing across all of social media lots of stories of female journalists, female public figures, getting death threats, getting rape threats, having to deal with abusive emails, and it's beneath all of us. Some of the female contributors that we have at The Breakdown, and we've used in the past, that have been members of the team, some still are members of the team, some of them have received some of that kind of stuff before. This is a very real thing. This isn't a one-off. This goes right back to the videos that we've seen for years where you get some idiot who walks by and throws the F her in the P comment during a video bit. It's misogynistic, it's abusive, and it shouldn't be tolerated by anyone. And anybody who engages in that kind of crap is just a coward, especially if you're doing it from the anonymity of the internet. Now I get my share of little digs. I get my share of people saying, oh, I don't like that guy with the white guy with the goatee. And I get lots of that. I have never been threatened with violence. I have never been threatened with sexual assault. It doesn't happen to men. It happens to women. And we need to do a much better job of talking about it. We need to do a much better job of calling it out, because the fact that it happens to anyone who's trying to exercise their voice purely because of their gender is absolutely disgusting. But getting back to the essay. So to wrap it all up, it was launched by a former associate minister for status of women. It was run by the Legislative Assembly Office. It was completed by the current Associate Minister for the Status of Women, and it was judged with the Parliamentary Secretary. Now, we've put in a couple of FOIPs on this, because originally we thought that the whole thing was done under the Ministry of Status of Women. And then Whitney Issig stood up at a press conference on Thursday and said, no, the Ministry of Status of Women has nothing to do with it. In fact, it's all the Legislative Assembly Office. Go talk to Nathan Cooper. So we've now submitted a FOIP for the Legislative Assembly Office. We expect to get the results sometime in 2025, maybe. But it'll be interesting to see. Now, one of the other things that's worth noting when it comes to Armstrong Homanek is that her ethics, I mean, she said it was a mistake. And a lot of UCP high-ranking figures have said, oh, she apologized, guys. She apologized. She admitted it was a mistake. We should all just move on. But there's a little bit of a pattern here that we maybe need to talk about. Because in 2020-2021, she charged taxpayers $50,000 for expenses. The year before that, she charged taxpayers $50,000 for expenses. Now, she's also charging for a residence in Edmonton. She lives in Vegreville. And in fairness, it's a little bit of a drive. We did the math. We checked it. It's 102 kilometers from Vegreville to the legislature. So that's like 2 hours of driving every day. But we did the math on her mileage, because she claimed that she had driven 49,029 kilometers last year. If you do the math on that, that requires you to drive 136 kilometers a day every day. If you're driving from Vegreville to the legislature, you'd have to be making that trip every 2 days, back and forth, like clockwork. And the trick with that is we had COVID. There's a lot of COVID. And a lot of MLA work was done remotely. The other trick is, typically, the legislature only sits in session for around 60 days a year. So, Moving on from there, the main events. And then, as always, once we get through our program proper, if anybody wants to weigh in, correct us, say mean things about me, on the Twitter spaces, you can absolutely do that. You just have to click on the little mic on the left-hand corner. But we're talking about the Alberta Prosperity Project now. Why are we talking about the Alberta Prosperity Project? That's a very good question. The short version is, they are hosting a leadership forum, dinner and forum, on August 25th. They're co-hosting it with the Rebel, because of course they are. Now, the launch of this thing has been fascinating to watch, because they announced it. They said, hey, we're doing a forum with the Rebel. It's going to be great. You should all pay a lot of money to attend. And there's going to be steak. It's going to be great. Come on out. And very shortly after that, there was more than a couple of UCP leadership candidates who very quickly said, no, you did not talk to us about this. We did not say that we were going to go. And so they pivoted. And now apparently there's four that are attending. Daniel Smith is attending. Todd Lowen is attending. Brian Jean is attending. And Travis Taves is attending. Now, why is that a problem, you might ask yourself? And there's actually a bunch of reasons. Because one of the things that we've seen throughout this leadership race is a willingness from some UCP leadership candidates to embrace, I can't even call it far right, we'll just go ahead and call it extreme right, and legitimize some of their views. There's been a few candidates that have openly condemned some stuff. Rajan Sani did an amazing job at the UCP leadership debate that was the official UCP leadership debate, where she said the Alberta Sovereignty Act is it's a train wreck, it's a lie, it will never work. There were a couple of other MLAs who have come out with positions strong on those things. But there are some MLAs who are pandering to these extremist groups. Now, you might be asking yourself, how extreme can they be really? Well, it turns out, really, really extreme. So the Alberta Prosperity Project isn't just some sort of think tank that wants to say to people, hey, you know what? We can do better by Albertans. We can come up with innovative and exciting policies. These guys are not the far-right version of the Fraser Institute. They are separatists, full stop. And they make no bones about it. They're very, very clear. Their website is a spectacular lesson in they're saying the quiet part out loud. Their vision on their website, the first point is Alberta becomes the most free and prosperous nation in the world to live, work, raise a family, and start a business. They don't believe that there's a need for a political right or left. And it goes on much, much deeper than that. So who are the Alberta Prosperity Project? Well, it seems like they're pretty new. Their first YouTube video was posted on February 17th in 2022. Their Twitter account was created in January of 2022. And their Facebook page first came to light, also January, first appeared on January 7th, 2022. So what are they trying to do? Well, it appears to be a brainchild of Dr. Dennis Modry. Some of you might find that name a little bit familiar, and there's a couple of reasons why. To start with, Dr. Dennis Modry is a thoracic surgeon who retired after losing his operating privileges in 2013 in what Dr. Modry called false allegations of poor clinical practice that included concerns that his patients died more frequently than other surgeons. Now, he came to fame again in 2020 after the Western Standard published a letter that he'd written about the COVID response in Alberta. And that was quickly called out by the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Alberta, who released a media statement that pointed out that Modry wasn't licensed to practice medicine and had no experience in public health. So you have to think an ex-physician has wandered pretty far out of their clinical area of clinical expertise, let's say, when the College of Physicians and Surgeons issues a preemptive statement to say, he has no experience in what he's talking about. He's not allowed to practice medicine anymore. Go about your day. But there's some other really fascinating people who are involved with the Alberta Prosperity Project. They offer courses and webinars. You can sign up and learn about the wonderful thing that is separatism, I guess. And when we take a look at some of the people who are involved in that, things start to get even more interesting. Because one of the characters who apparently is teaching courses where they're answering questions is a lawyer named Leighton Gray. Leighton Gray might sound familiar because he had to actually resign from a committee tasked with recommending new judges in Alberta because he posted a couple of different things. He made a comparison that COVID vaccines were like Auschwitz tattoos. And he posted a video that called Black Lives Matter a leftist lie that was controlled by a Jewish philanthropist. You might notice a bit of a theme going on here. And then we get to Tanner. Tanner, I'm going to guess his last name is pronounced 90. If I get it wrong, that's the one thing I'll apologize for. Tanner is the vice president of economics for the Alberta Prosperity Project. And he is quite a character. We shared a couple of videos that he produced, I guess, earlier in the week, because he has said some really offensive things. He did a whole bit that you can find on our timeline where he talks about how progressives are endorsing pedophilia. And he's got a bunch of other thoughts. So in regards to the World Economic Forum, on his website, he's got an article where he says Klaus Schwab, who's the head of the World Economic Forum, which we're going to talk about at the very end of the show, is evil because he's anti-human. Having children attend drag queen story time is abusive. These are headlines that are up on his own website. We need to put the prayer back in school. He has a very prolific YouTube account. He has a very prolific Facebook page. And he said some really interesting things about abortion as well. I want to read a little section to you here. Abortion out of the womb or abortion in it. What does it matter for the progressive? He's already neglected life to such a perverted extent that the fetus is often called a parasite. Call it a conspiracy. Call it what one will. Our tolerance of abortion has normalized our intolerance of life. And be warned, the progressive will never stop at a certain point, like keeping abortion in the womb, as wrong as that already is, because he would no longer be progressive at all. He then ends it with, but if we capitulate to his demands, we shall be hailed lower than even the most primal of animals, for animals are a part of a kingdom. The abortionist, on the other hand, makes his lair in the pandemonium of hell. Tanner has some religious beliefs. He actually posts videos every Sunday of sermons, if you will. And that's where the big one that we posted earlier in the week came from. But what is really important to know about Tanner is he's got a tremendous following. If you go to his Facebook page, most of his videos have tens of thousands of views. There are a lot of people who are paying attention to what Tanner is saying. He's a regular speaker at Alberta Prosperity Project events. You go to the Alberta Prosperity Project YouTube page, half of the videos are him speaking. Dennis Modry's in there as well. But Tanner seems to be the big guy that's doing a lot of the rhetoric, which is really ironic because he sounds like, as far as I'm concerned, some sort of human speech to text machine. His delivery is unique. And I know there's a lot of people who are going to say, you know what, I don't want to spend any time watching that guy's crap because it's absolutely garbage. And I totally get that. But here's the thing. These guys are hosting a UCP leadership forum that the three front-running candidates are attending. They're not getting smaller. In the few short months that they've been in existence, they have grown to that level of influence. And that is something that everybody in Alberta should be paying very, very close attention to, because they make no bones about what their stances are. They're not trying to hide the fact that they are virulently anti-choice. They're not trying to hide the fact that their decisions are being guided by their version of religion that appears to have no tolerance for anything other than what they're pursuing. But there's still more, because they have policies too. If you get into the documentation on their website, they've got some really interesting ideas about what the future of Alberta should look like. Unsurprisingly, they are big advocates in the right to bear arms. Also unsurprisingly, they want to really, really lean on the personal freedom side of things. Nobody should ever be able to restrict personal freedoms. They want to, immediately after the formation of the country of Alberta, suspend immigration. Why is that important? You think about how many new Canadians come to Alberta because it's a place where they can build their families. It's a place where they can build their lives. And for a lot of them, part of the goal is to get their extended families out of the incredibly difficult living circumstances that they're in. It's also incredibly important to note that Alberta's economy absolutely needs immigration. There's no question around that. And these guys are saying right out of the gates, they're going to shut the borders, no more immigrants into Alberta. These are the people who have the ear of the four front runners of the UCP leadership race. There's a couple other fun things they want to do. My favorite one, though, is that they want to create an army for the nation of Alberta. They want to create an Air Force. And my favorite one, I love this one so much, they want to create a Navy. I don't know what they do with it, but they want to create a Navy. And they want to create a cyber force. So there's a whole lot going on with these guys. But where it gets really, really interesting, and where it's incredibly telling that the UCP are standing by and letting this be a thing, because it's important to realize that in the leadership race rules, it says that the party has control and final say over what the debates and the forums are. If you go into the website of the Alberta Prosperity Project that has been around since 2022, they have posted, as of May, their proposed party bylaws. This isn't just a think tank. This is a group of people that want to start a far-right extremist party in the province of Alberta. And yet we have Danielle Smith, Travis Taves, Brian Jean, and Todd Loewen apparently attending the event that they're co-hosting with the Rebel. And there's really only two ways to split this. On one hand, either there's parts of their ideologies that align, or they're going to an event that they're completely against by an organization that wants to be a political party. Can you imagine if the Green Party or if the NDP decided to have a UCP leadership forum and dinner, and that they said, we're going to invite all the UCP candidates? That's the scale of things that we're talking about here. That's how ridiculous this is. They also have constituency association bylaws that were posted as of February 10th, 2022. Now, we talked to Bill Rock about this. Bill Rock was one of the almost UCP leadership candidates that we did an interview with a while back, because he had said, you know, those Alberta Prosperity Project guys, they seem kind of okay. And we asked him about it. And even Bill was like, well, they promised me that they weren't going to become a political party. And he said that some of their ideas were just too far out there for him, but you have to listen to all ideas. Now, I got to be really clear. There's, again, a big difference between listening to ideas, picking and choosing which ones are, I don't know, grounded in reality and which ones aren't, and simply saying, we're going to legitimize this organization by helping them sell tickets to their dinner. There's a big difference between those two things. This isn't discussion. This isn't supporting democracy. This is supporting a fledgling far-right extremist separatist party in the province of Alberta with their presence. Now, the last thing I got to talk about before we open up the floor is the WEF. Because 2 weeks ago, I said we were going to do a deep dive on the WEF. We were going to take a look at what it is, because there's so many people who seem to think that it's in the end of the world. Danielle Smith has come out and said, as much as she believes in freedom and not limiting people's freedom, nobody that's involved with her government will be able to be members of the WEF. It will not be tolerated. And I've spent a lot of time looking at the WEF. A couple other members of the team spent some time looking at the WEF. And the problem that we keep running into is it's a giant nothing burger. There's nothing that's remarkable about it. It is effectively a group of subject matter experts talking about their subject matter expertise. They occasionally have essays they produce. Some of them are more thought experimenty. Some of them are policy recommendations. But the vast majority of all of it is really quite straightforward. It's not an exclusive club, and I know this because I went on their website and I got myself a WEF membership for free. So I don't know if that makes me super elite. I don't feel any different, but that's what it is. People talk about the Great Reset. Here's the thing about the Great Reset. It's a book. That's all it is. It's a book that was written by Klaus Schwab, who is the boss of the WEF, and it basically just says, and I have listened now to the whole thing, it basically just says, hey, so we kind of got surprised by some of that COVID stuff, hey, kind of showed us some vulnerabilities, we should probably address those. Also, we know from history that there's certain ways that this thing is probably going to pull, we might want to get ready for that too. That's it. that's just addressing the fact that there was this huge cataclysmic event that happened in all of our lifetimes, and there's a recovery effort, and we should probably think about what that recovery effort is going to look like. That's the whole ball game. I mean, some of it's really inaccessible because it is written at a very high level of expertise. There were certainly sections of the book that got so economic-y that I had to slow down and take a deep breath, but that's it. That's the whole thing. It's boring. Nobody should be scared of the WEF. It's just a platform where smart people talk about smart things. That's all. So that's our WEF segment. If anybody wants to add anything to the conversation, if anybody wants to share anything, now's the time. We'll open it up. As always, if you're on the mobile devices, because Twitter Spaces doesn't allow for computer-based people to play with things, then it's important. You can just kind of tag in a little bit. I'm going to do my little ending spiel. Like I said, we filed a bunch of FOIP requests. FOIP requests are not free. And we're able to do those things because of the support that we get from our Patreon sponsors. It makes a really big difference in us being able to do the kind of things that we do. And we really, really appreciate the support that we get from our Patreon sponsors. So if looks like we have another request here, I'll get to that in just one sec. Finish my spiel first. If you would be willing to throw us $5 a month, price of a fancy cup of coffee, it helps to pay for not only all of the toys that let us do the live streaming and all of that, but it also allows us to do the FOIP requests and all of the other things. Looks like we've got Rob here. I love your title, Rob. What's going on tonight?
Not a whole lot. Just you talking about the UCP and who they are is what scares me the most. I'm not originally from Alberta, but Danielle Smith is a lunatic, in my opinion. The fact that Kenny is talking how far right she is should be alarming to us all. We're talking about a premier that 80% of Albertans probably didn't like, and now we're going to go even further to the right. I don't know about you, but it definitely concerns me.
I gotta say, I have been watching social media today, and I have been sort of measuring my own holy crap, I find myself agreeing with Mr. Kenny with, I think, the shock of a lot of people across Alberta right now who are having the exact same reaction, because Kenny did call out the Sovereignty Act. He called it nuts on his radio show yesterday. The fact that even Mr. Kenny, who created the war room, who rolled back protections for LGBTQ youth, I mean, the list of things that Kenny has done goes on for days. The fact that this guy's like, I think you might be overstepping, is really quite telling.
Absolutely. It's almost like Stephen Harper thinking he has a second chance at running. And being the progressive type person, like, we're talking about a lady, Danielle Smith, had a radio show where she tried to claim she cared about her employees and then still didn't have any idea how many hours they would need for EI.
Yeah.
But she was there for them. Absolute garbage. Not a fucking chance. Sorry if I swear.
That's okay.
But she was there for Danielle. She wasn't there for them.
Well, you know? And one of the things that we've seen with Danielle Smith is that she has a willingness to play not only fast and loose with the existing rules, but she'll very much choose to ignore the ones that she doesn't like. We have an episode coming up in about a week and a half with Martin Olshinsky, who is a lawyer. He's a law professor at the University of Calgary. And he's deeply, deeply concerned about the strategy that she's adopting and the fact that there are some historical precedents that if we're not at least talking about, we're setting ourselves up potentially for some pretty dangerous stuff.
Absolutely. We could be looking at a potential government that's trying to head to a civil war. And I don't think it'll get to that point. And if it did, it just speaks to the stupidity of the party that is elected, because we're surrounded on every side. But her legislation that she talks about, one, will never pass through a court. And two, it's just absolutely absurd.
Yep. I don't disagree with you. Anything else that you want to say there, Rob?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Well,
I enjoyed your show, though. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks for tapping in. We got somebody else who wants to tap in as well. Looks like we've got Caden. Caden, what's going on today?
Can you hear me okay? No echo?
Yeah, we can hear you good.
Perfect. So I'm wondering, I see people a lot rightfully concerned about Danielle Smith, and I would agree. But I do see some division in regards to what that would mean for the future of Alberta politics. Do you feel that a Danielle Smith victory kind of paves the way for the NDP in the next provincial election, or do you think there is a considerable chance that she could win? I'm on the fence about this. Thanks for the question.
Yeah, well, I'll do my best to answer that, and then I'm probably going to kick most of that over to the next person who's put their hand up. I mean, one of the things, I think anybody who's been watching Alberta politics for any length of time, particularly in the last 3 years, has to have sort of realized is that trying to predict the future of what's going to happen in Alberta politics is impossible. I mean, I remember less than a year ago, Danielle Smith was saying that she was unelectable and she would never run for office again. And yet here we are with her as a front runner in the UCP leadership race. I would like to think that the better voices, the better angels of Albertans will recognize, if Smith wins, that we would be fueling something very, very dangerous. And what my concern is, speaking only for myself and not for anyone else here at The Breakdown, is that what we could potentially see is Danielle Smith kick all of her legislation, proposed legislation, down the line, make them election issues so that people don't actually have the opportunity to see how catastrophic a lot of her policies would actually be. And I think that they're, you know, one of the historical realities, and we talk about this with Martin Olshinsky on that episode that I was referring to that we've got coming up. One of the historical realities is that when you have a population that has gone through a major crisis, whether it's economic or biological or what have you, that is the time when we tend to see in history the worst things happen. People are tired, people feel that they're out of control, and we're seeing more and more amplification of this kind of stuff. And I mean, the fact that the Alberta Prosperity Project is even being shown the time of day, I think really speaks to just how far things have gotten. They're being given a main stage at this UCP leadership race. They're teaming up with one of the biggest alternative media groups that exist out there. I mean, something's changing, and I haven't seen, and then I'm going to get dear data away in here because otherwise I'll just keep going, but I haven't seen from the NDP a whole lot to inspire Albertans. I mean, jogging's nice, I guess, and you know, I already knew about the lizards that shoot blood from their eyes, but I'm not sure that that's what Albertans are looking for from a provincial government. I think that the messaging that the NDP has been doing has so far been spectacularly soft, And I don't think that they're inspiring people. And I don't think that they're diffusing the people who are angry. But I'm going to ask, Deirdre, what do you think?
So, you know that I haven't... I'm not confident that a Danielle Smith-led UCP will make them unelectable. I'm not confident at all. And, I mean, you know, Alberta could surprise me. They elected an NDP government in 2015. Alberta could surprise me. But the thing is that, you know, Danielle Smith did have a radio show for how many years? She got in there in 2015?
I mean, sure.
So, yeah, something like that. So for 5 years, she did the morning show. And to be honest, she actually did a decent job, at least for the first few years. Yeah, she got wacky during the pandemic. Because she was trying to platform other voices that couldn't get on anywhere else. And I think that would backfire for her, but all of those episodes are gone. They were gone very shortly after she left. So, I mean, if you were still listening to her, if you hadn't listened to her for a year or two, Danielle Smith has name recognition. She's going to have very possibly a blue sign. And Calgary is going to decide this election. So, unfortunately, it is scary. I mean, exactly like you said, Nate. You know, if she kind of holds off, saying yes, we're drafting legislation, yes, we're doing this, and manages to hold off until May, why would anyone think that she's all that scary? Because most people don't pay attention to this.
Yeah.
So no, I am absolutely not confident that Danielle Smith brings the UCP down. I mean, she could. She has the capacity.
Oh, Lord knows. She
absolutely has the capacity. but will she? I mean, I have no confidence that is an absolute.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I learned over, well, particularly starting in 2018, 2019, is, you know, there's those of us that are having this conversation right now, or listening to this conversation. There's those of us who are trying to follow the things as best as we can on the Twitter machine and all of that. And then there's the other 95% of the population that is really just saying, you know, I want to go to work. I want to come home. I want to, you know, spend some time with my kids or my spouse or watch a game or whatever. But staying abreast of the shit show that is Alberta politics these days is not very high on most people's list. And there's, I think, a lot of people that, you know, the expression is paint a rock blue in Alberta and they'll vote for it. I think that there's a lot of people that, unless something really dynamic happens that affects them personally, I don't think that it's a guarantee that she's gonna fall apart. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add there, Deirdre? Because you kind of tapped in before I pivoted to throwing that to you.
No, like Caden's question was good, and I kind of actually thought that you might ask for that from me because I've also been following, like, I kept following Danielle Smith after she was out of politics, and during the pandemic as well. I only wrote about it a little bit. I didn't talk about what she was doing too much because it didn't need more of a platform, but I still kept up with a lot of the things that she was doing. And, you know, I still haven't rewatched the full Western Standard debate, but the little bit that I did catch, I felt like she was toning things down a bit. And now, let's see. We talked last time right after the first UCP debate, right?
Yep.
And after that, I went to a bunch of conservative Facebook groups that I'm a member of because everyone. Apparently, most people that are on my Facebook are all conservatives, so they invite me to these things. And I go, and it's also the reason I don't go on Facebook much, because I get notifications, and they just really make me angry. But the thing is, I went there, and I checked out what, super excited conservative supporters were thinking about the leadership race and about the debate. And one of the things that I found, which was very disturbing, was that conservative supporters were really impressed with how Daniel Smith handled the debate. And so I kind of read through a bunch of different comments. Then I went back and rewatched it. And watching it again through that lens of, this is like, I thought she was, really strong. I thought that other people were bullying her, things like that. When I rewatched it with that in my head, I saw a slightly different Daniel Smith. I saw someone who is a very good orator, someone who tells stories in a way, like, she's very engaging. And so, her time with 770 really helped out. She can tell a story. She's a very good speaker. And if you can be lulled, and people can, that's an actual thing. People can be lulled by someone who's a good speaker and not really considering exactly what she's saying. We're in trouble. Alberta is probably in trouble. Because I see what they see, or I see what they saw. It's why I can't say that she would sink the party, unless she starts with some of this. And Dwayne Bratt actually brought up a good proposition. If she gets the legislation drafted and she actually tables the Alberta Sovereignty Act and it doesn't pass because UCP MLAs vote against it, is that a confidence vote, and does that force an election? This is her big thing. She comes in. What happens if they vote it down? And the thing is, that's possible. I know that some people are having some conversations with some UCP MLAs who don't want to be under Daniel Smith's leadership.
I think it's going to be really interesting, because one of the things that I think is really telling and really alarming, and you kind of touched on this a little bit, is the fact that Daniel Smith was doing her little podcast web series throughout her campaign, and then she dropped her really horrible comments about cancer and cancer patients, and that blew up all over the place. It was a big theme of the UCP leadership debate that you mentioned there, and since then she has kind of ratcheted back a little bit, and that's actually scary for me. Because I think she showed who she was early on, and I think she realized that she needed to be presenting a little bit more of a facade, a little bit more of a palatable approach to things. And that's really alarming to me, because if somebody's always saying the quiet part out loud, then you know where they stand. But when someone demonstrates that they have the capacity to go, you know what, I'm not going to say these things out loud anymore, I'm just going to wait, those are the people that scare me. Tammy, you've gone ahead and raised your hand as well. What's going on?
Hi. Okay, so as far as the fact that the NDP won before, I always put it this way to people. It's not that the NDP won. It's that the UCP lost. People weren't voting for the NDP. They were voting against the UCP because they were angry with them. Because they were angry at the conservatives that had done a thing that they didn't like. So what do you do when you're angry with someone? You vote the other side. So they weren't voting because they believed in the NDP. They were voting because they were angry with the other side. And it's super frightening for me because I'm recently disabled, and I've watched how they treat disabled folks, especially on that side. And like her entire bit about cancer, I've had cancer. That's one of the things that have left me disabled. I luckily, it's, you know, I've been told that it's not cured, but I'm in remission. And it's the sort of cancer that they expect it won't come back. But still, it's like being in a province where, and I was born and raised here, but, you know, Edmonton is an NDP stronghold, but where our farm is, you know, 30 miles west, I was literally afraid during the last election to mention that I was an NDP supporter.
Yeah.
Because that's how, I don't even know how to put it. That's how angry and how horrible the Albertans are who support the UCP. I worked with a lady and she's like, well, you know, we need austerity now. And I'm like, but you're Catholic. Don't you care about disabled? This is before I became disabled. Don't you care about disabled people? She's like, well, there's church, the church company. I'm like, churches don't give enough to make sure that people, you know, they do for Christmas. What about the other 364 days a year?
Yeah. I think another really important point that I just want to jump on right there is, you know, you talk about the fact that people weren't voting for the UCP. And I mean, in 2015, the reality was, is that there were two conservative parties. There was the Wild Rose and there was the PC. And what Mr. Kenney very rightly put together from a strategy standpoint is that as long as there were two conservative parties that were able to pull any kind of weight at all, then they wouldn't have a good shot at overcoming the NDP. And that's why the UCP became a thing. I mean, the whole mantra was we have to unite to defeat the NDP. And unless we see a major, major split in conservative parties, to go back to your question a little bit there, Caden, I mean, I'm no political strategist, but I personally, without that split, I don't see how the NDP can reasonably form a path to government, especially if Smith continues to build this momentum.
Exactly. I'd agree with that. 100%.
Anything else that you'd like to add there, Tammy?
Nope, that was it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for tagging in there.
Thank you. Yep, great one.
You as well. Anybody else want to throw their hat into the mix? We're running definitely late tonight, but that's okay. That's the conversations are the whole reason why we do these things. So if you do, I mean, if you're one of our existing speakers, go ahead and unmute yourself. If you're maybe just somebody who's hanging in the background, feel free to raise your hand as well. And doesn't look like anyone else wants to weigh in. And that's totally okay, because we're going to be back. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I was trying to let anybody new speak. But the only thing I have to say about the whole NDP, Danielle Smith idea, is I don't know if I buy into Rachel can't win because Danielle Smith, momentum, or whatever. The thing is, the UCP has pissed a lot of people off. Indexing age, closing emergency rooms, not funding people. They've shot themselves in the foot. I'm just saying is, I think this is probably the most wide open election Alberta's ever had.
Well, I hope you're right, and I'll be honest with you, Rob. There's a big part of me that would love to see another political party make some representation in the legislature as well, because I think that, you know, one of the things that we've seen in this incarnation of the legislature is that there hasn't been any collaboration. There hasn't been any cooperation. It's been adversarial from the minute go all the way till now. And I think that the more parties that we have at the table, the more likelihood there is. I mean, I obviously I have my own biases, but I personally think that Greg Clark was a hell of a statesman. And I would love to see somebody like Greg show their self in the legislature again, but wishes were horses and all that. Anything else you wanted to add there, Rob?
Oh, no. Just enjoyed the show. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Deirdre, you've unmuted yourself. That means you got something to say.
I also want to say I'm not convinced the NDP can't win. So I don't want to, like, I don't want to just be, I guess what I'm saying is that everyone's going to really work for this next election. And, you know, I had a conversation with Janet Brown. Maybe Angela Grace recently, and she was saying, she's like, you know, Rachel Notley and Janice Irwin are spending a lot of time in Calgary. So it's this election is not absolutely not, but it is, you know, it's going to take work, and I just don't want, I guess I'm going to keep hammering on that it's not guaranteed Dan Smith let UCP will lose in 2023, because the other sides kept working because Daniel Smith gets elected, right? It's not a double. So, I mean, I'm not convinced that Daniel Smith makes the NDP win, but I'm also not convinced that they can't win if she's premier. So I guess I just want people to keep in mind that it's going to take work, and the work is getting on the doors.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely, absolutely right there, Deirdre. And that's really one of the big reasons why we continue to do what we do here, because the more that people can be engaged, and the more that people can start to feel comfortable having conversations with other people that they maybe normally wouldn't have those conversations with, that's how the ball's gonna get rolling. Because the reality is, and this is the thought that I'll end things on, the reality is that COVID in a lot of ways gave the more extreme elements like the Alberta Prosperity Project the opportunity to learn how to organize and to get organized. And the fact that we're seeing an organization that went from nothing to filling ag halls across Alberta to hosting a UCP leadership forum, those extreme elements have done a very, very good job of learning how to get people motivated. And it's not going to be countered by not doing the same thing. So that's where I'll leave things for tonight. I wanted to say a big thank you to everybody who's been listening for the last hour and a half, and especially big thank you for everybody who weighed in with their thoughts. It's the conversation piece that I just love so much. So thank you for that. And this will be available very shortly as a podcast. So if you're listening to the podcast version, thank you for listening to the podcast. And if you have watched me mostly listen to people on YouTube for the last half hour, thanks for sticking around, because I'm pretty boring to look at. So thanks for that. As always, treat each other with kindness, take care of each other, keep the conversation going.